Paul shrugged and held up one trailing sleeve, as if he were not sure which it was. He stared at it, looking puzzled. The black colour of it ran downward from his shoulder into the pointed hanging tip. His shoulder and the top of his sleeve grew brown, then grey, while the pointed tip turned inkier and inkier, until Howell was wearing a black suit with one blue and silver sleeve, whose end seemed to have been dipped in tar. "That one," he said, and let the black spread back up to his shoulder again. Sophie was somehow more annoyed than ever. She gave a wordless grump of rage. "Sophie," Howell said in his most laughing, pleading way. The dogman pushed open the yard door and shambled in. He never would let Howell talk to Sophie for long. Howell stared at it. "You've got an old English sheepdog now," he said, as if he was glad of the distraction. "Two dogs are going to take a lot of feeding." "There's only one dog," Sophie said crossly. "He's under a spell."
"He is?" said Howell, and he set off toward the dog with a speed that showed he was quite glad to get away from Sophie. This, of course, was the last thing the dogman wanted. He backed away. Howell pounced and caught him by two handfuls of shaggy hair before he could reach the door.
"So he is," he said, and knelt down to look into what could be seen of the sheepdog's eyes.
"Sophie," he said, "what do you mean by not telling me about this? This dog is a man, and he's in a terrible state."
Howell whirled round on one knee, still holding the dog. Sophie looked into Howell's glass marble glare and realized that Howell was angry now, really angry.
"Good." Sophie felt like a fight. "You could have noticed for yourself," she said, glaring back, daring Howell to do his worst with green slime. "Anyway, the dog didn't want..."
Howell was too angry to listen. He jumped up and hauled the dog across the tiles.
"And so I would have done, if I hadn't had things on my mind," he said. "Come on. I want you in front of Calcifer."
The dog braced all four shaggy feet. Howell lugged at it, braced and sliding.
"Michael!" he yelled.
There was a particular sound to that yell which brought Michael running.
"And did you know this dog was really a man?"
Howell asked, as he and Michael dragged the reluctant mountain of dog up the stairs.
"He's not, is he?"
Michael asked, shocked and surprised.
"Then I let you off, and just blame Sophie," Howell said, hauling the dog through the broom cupboard. "Anything like this is always Sophie. But you knew, didn't you, Calcifer?"
he said, as the two of them dragged the dog in front of the hearth. Calcifer retreated until he was bent backward against the chimney.
"You never asked," he said.
"Do I have to ask you?" Howell said. "All right, I should have noticed myself. But you disgust me, Calcifer. Compared with the way the witch treats her demon, you live a revoltingly easy life, and all I ask in return is that you tell me things I need to know. This is twice you've let me down. Now help me get this creature to its own shape this minute."
Calcifer was an unusually sickly shade of blue.
"All right," he said sulkily. The dogman tried to get away, but Howell got his shoulder under its chest and shoved, so that it went up onto its hind legs willy-nilly. Then he and Michael held it there.
"What's the silly creature holding out for?" Howell panted. "This feels like one of the Witch of the Wastes again, doesn't it?"
"Yes, there are several layers of it," said Calcifer.
"Let's get the dog part off anyway," said Howell.
Calcifer surged to a deep, roaring blue. Sophie, watching prudently from the door of the broom cupboard, saw the shaggy dog shape fade away inside the man shape. It faded to dog again, then back to man, blurred, then hardened. Finally, Howell and Michael were each holding the arm of a ginger-haired man in a crumpled brown suit. Sophie was not surprised. She had not recognized him. Apart from his anxious look, his face
was almost totally lacking in personality. "Now, who are you, my friend?" Howl asked him. The man put his hands up and shakily felt his face. I'm not sure, Calcifer said.
The most recent name he answered to was Percival.
The man looked at Calcifer as if he wished Calcifer did not know this. Did I? He said.
Then we'll call you Percival for now, Hal said.
He turned the ex-dog round and sat him in the chair.
Sit there and take it easy and tell us what you do remember. By the feel of you, the witch had you for some time.
Yes, said Percival, rubbing his face again. She took my head off. I remember being on a shelf, looking at the rest of me.
Micah was astonished. But you'd be dead, he protested.
Not necessarily, said Howl. You haven't got to that sort of witchcraft yet, but I could take any piece of you I wanted and leave the rest of you alive, if I went about it the right way.
He frowned at the ex-dog.
But I'm not sure the witch put this one back together properly.
Calcifer, who was obviously trying to prove that he was working hard for Howl, said,
This man is incomplete, and he has parts from some other man, too.
Percival looked more distraught than ever.
Don't alarm him, Calcifer, Hal said. He must feel bad enough anyway.
Do you know why the witch took your head off, my friend? He asked Percival.
No, said Percival. I don't remember anything.
Sophie knew that could not be true. She snorted, rather.
Michael was suddenly seized with the most exciting idea. He leaned over Percival and asked,
Did you ever answer to the name of Justin, or Your Royal Highness?
Sophie snorted again. She knew this was ridiculous even before Percival said,
No, the witch called me Gaston, but that isn't my name.
Don't crowd him, Michael, said Howl. And don't make Sophie snort again. The mood she's in, she'll bring down the castle next time.
Though that seemed to mean Howl was no longer angry, Sophie found she was angrier than ever. She stumped off into the shop, where she banged about, shutting the shop and putting things away for the night. She went to look at her daffodils. Something had gone horribly wrong with them. They were wet brown things trailing out of a bucket full of the most poisonous-smelling liquid she had ever come across.
"Oh, confound it all!" Sophie yelled.
"What's all this now?" said Howl, arriving in the shop. He bent over the bucket and sniffed. "You seem to have some rather efficient weed-killer here. How about trying it on those weeds on the drive of the mansion?"
"I will," said Sophie. "I feel like killing something."
She slammed around until she had found a watering can and stumped through into the castle with the can and the bucket, where she hurled open the door, orange down, onto the mansion drive. Percival looked up anxiously. They had given him the guitar, rather as you gave a baby a rattle, and he was sitting making horrible twangings.
"You go with her, Percival," Howl said. "The mood she's in, she'll be killing all the trees, too."
So Percival laid down the guitar and took the bucket carefully out of Sophie's hand. Sophie stumped out into a golden summer evening at the end of the valley. Everyone had been too busy up to now to pay much attention to the mansion. It was much grander than Sophie had realized. It had a weedy terrace with statues along the edge and steps down to the drive. When Sophie looked back, on the pretext of telling Percival to hurry up, she saw the house was very big, with more statues along the roof and rows of windows. But it was derelict. Green mildew ran down the peeling wall from every window. Many of the windows were broken, and the shutters that should have folded against the wall beside them were grey and blistered and hanging sideways.
"Huh," said Sophie. "I think the least Howl could do is make the place look a bit more lived in. But no, he's far too busy gadding off to Wales. Don't just stand there, Percival.
Pour some of that stuff into the can and then come along behind me.
Percival meekly did as she said. He was no fun at all to bully. Sophie suspected that was why Hal had sent him with her. She snorted and took her anger out on the weeds. Whatever the stuff was that had killed the daffodils, it was strong. The weeds in the drive died as soon as it touched them. So did the grass at the sides of the drive, until Sophie calmed down a little. The evening calmed her. The fresh air was blowing off the distant hills, and clumps of trees planted at the sides of the drive rustled majestically in it. Sophie weed-killed her way down a quarter of the drive.
"You remember a great deal more than you let on," she accused Percival, while he refilled her can. "What did the witch really want with you? Why did she bring you into the shop with her that time?"
"She wanted to find out about Howl," Percival said.
"Howl?" said Sophie. "But you didn't know him, did you?"
"No. But I must have known something. It had to do with the curse she'd put on him," Percival explained. "But I've no idea what it was. She took it, you see, after we came to the shop. I feel bad about that. I was trying to stop her knowing because a curse is an evil thing, and I did it by thinking about Letty. Letty was just in my head. I don't know how I knew her, because Letty said she'd never seen me when I went to Upper Folding, but I knew all about her, enough so that when the witch made me tell her about Letty, I said she kept a hat shop in Market Chipping. So the witch went there to teach us both a lesson. And you were there. She thought you were Letty. I was horrified because I didn't know Letty had a sister."
Sophie picked up the can and weed-killed generously, wishing the weeds were the witch.
"And she turned you into a dog straight after that?"
"Just outside the town," said Percival. "As soon as I'd let her know what she wanted, she opened the carriage door and said, 'Off you run, I'll call you when I need you.' And I ran, because I could feel some sort of spell following me. It caught up just as I got to a farm, and the people there saw me change into a dog and thought I was a werewolf and tried to kill me. I had to bite one to get away, but I couldn't get rid of the stick, and it stuck in the hedge when I tried to get through."
Sophie weed-killed her way down another curve of the drive as she listened.
"Then you went to Mrs. Fairfax's?"
"Yes. I was looking for Letty. They were both very kind to me," Percival said, "even though they'd never seen me before. And Wizard Hal kept visiting to court Letty. Letty didn't want him, and she asked me to bite him to get rid of him, until Hal suddenly began asking her about you, and—"
Sophie narrowly missed weed-killing her shoes. Since the gravel was smoking where the stuff met it, this was probably just as well.
"What?"
"He said, 'I know someone called Sophie who looks a little like you,' and Letty said, 'That's my sister,' without thinking," Percival said. "And she got terribly worried then, particularly as Hal went on asking about her sister. Letty said she could have bitten her tongue off. The day you came there, she was being nice to Hal in order to find out how he knew you. Hal said you were an old woman, and Mrs. Fairfax said she'd seen you. Letty cried and cried. She said, 'Something terrible has happened to Sophie, and the worst of it is she'll think she's safe from Howl. Sophie's too kind herself to see how heartless Howl is, and she was so upset that I managed to turn into a man long enough to say I'd go and keep an eye on you.'"
Sophie spread Weed Killer in a great smoking arc.
"Bother Letty! It's very kind of her, and I love her dearly for it. I've been quite as worried about her. But I do not need a watchdog."
"Yes, you do," said Percival. "Or you did. I arrived far too late."
Sophie swung round, Weed Killer and all. Percival had to leap into the grass and run for his life behind the nearest tree. The grass died in a long brown swathe behind him as he ran.
"Curse everyone!" Sophie cried out. I've done with the lot of you."
She dumped the smoking watering can in the middle of the drive and marched off through the weeds toward the stone gateway.
"Too late," she muttered as she marched. "What nonsense. Hal's not only heartless, he's impossible. Besides," she added, "I am an old woman."
But she could not deny that something had been wrong ever since the moving castle moved, or even before that. And it seemed to tie up with the way Sophie seemed so mysteriously unable to face either of her sisters.
"And all the things I told the king are true," she went on. She was going to march 7 leagues on her own 2 feet and not come back. Show everyone. Who cared that poor Mrs. Pentstemon had relied on Sophie to stop Howell from going to the bad? Sophie was a failure anyway. It came of being the eldest. And Mrs. Pentstemon had thought Sophie was Howell's loving old mother anyway, hadn't she? Or had she? Uneasily, Sophie realised that a lady whose trained eye could detect a charm sewn into a suit could surely even more easily detect the stronger magic of the witch's spell. "Oh, confound that grey and scarlet suit," Sophie said. "I refuse to believe that I was the one that got caught with it." The trouble was, the blue and silver suit seemed to have worked just the same. She stumped a few steps further. "Anyway," she said with great relief, "Howell doesn't like me." This reassuring thought would have been enough to keep Sophie walking all night, had not a sudden familiar uneasiness swept over her. Her ears had caught a distant tock. She looked sharply under the low sun, and there, on the road which wound away behind the stone gate, was a distant figure with outstretched arms, hopping, hopping. Sophie picked up her skirts, whirled round, and sped back the way she had come. Dust and gravel flew up round her in clouds. Percival was standing forlornly in the drive beside the bucket and the watering can. Sophie seized him and dragged him behind the nearest trees. "Is something wrong?" he said. "Quiet! It's that drutted scarecrow again!" Sophie gasped. She shut her eyes. "We're not here," she said. "You can't find us. Go away. Go away. Fast. Fast. Fast." "But why?" said Percival. "Shut up! Not here. Not here. Not here!" Sophie said desperately. She opened one eye. The scarecrow, almost between the gateposts, was standing still, swaying uncertainly. "That's right," said Sophie. "We're not here. Go away fast. Twice as fast. 3 times as fast. 10 times as fast. Go away."
And the scarecrow hesitantly swayed round on its stick and began to hop back up the road. After the first few hops, it was going in giant leaps. Faster and faster, just as Sophie had told it to. Sophie hardly breathed, and did not let go of Percival's sleeve until the scarecrow was out of sight.
"What's wrong with it?" said Percival. "Why didn't you want it?"
Sophie shuddered. Since the scarecrow was out on the road, she did not dare leave now. She picked up the watering can and stumped back to the mansion. A fluttering caught her eye as she went. She looked up at the building. The flutter was from long white curtains blowing from an open French window beyond the statues of the terrace. The statues were now clean white stone, and she could see curtains at most of the windows and glass too. The shutters were now folded properly beside them, newly painted white. Not a green stain nor a blister marked the new creamy plaster of the house front. The front door was a masterpiece of black paint and gold scrollwork, centering on a gilded lion with a ring in its mouth for a door knocker.
"Ha!" said Sophie.
She resisted the temptation to go in through the open window and explore. That was what Howell wanted her to do. She marched straight to the front door, seized the golden doorknob, and threw the door open with a crash. Howell and Michael were at the bench, hastily dismantling a spell. Part of it must have been to change the mansion, but the rest, as Sophie well knew, had to be a listening-in spell of some kind.
As Sophie stormed in, both their faces shot nervously round toward her. Calcifer instantly plunged down under his logs.
"Keep behind me, Michael," said Howl.
"Eavesdropper!" Sophie shouted. "Snooper!"
"What's wrong?" Howl said.
"Do you want the shutters black and gold too?"
"You bare-faced!"
Sophie stuttered. "That wasn't the only thing you heard. How long have you known I was..."
"I am..."
"Under a spell?" said Howl.
"Well, now..."
"I told him," Michael said, looking nervously round Howl. "My Letty..."
"You?"
Sophie shrieked.
"The other Letty let the cat out of the bag too," Howl said quickly.
"You know she did. And Mrs. Fairfax talked a great deal that day. There was a time when everyone seemed to be telling me. Even Calcifer did when I asked him. But do you honestly think I don't know my own business well enough not to spot a strong spell like that when I see it? I had several goes at taking it off you when you weren't looking. But nothing seems to work. I took you to Mrs. Pentstemon, hoping she could do something. But she evidently couldn't. I came to the conclusion that you liked being in disguise."
"Disguise?" Sophie yelled.
Howl laughed at her. "It must be, since you're doing it yourself," he said. "What a strange family you are. Is your name really Letty, too?" This was too much for Sophie. Percival edged nervously in just then, carrying the half-full bucket of weed killer. Sophie dropped her can, seized the bucket from him, and threw it at Howl. Howl ducked, Michael dodged the bucket. The weed killer went up in a sheet of sizzling green flame from floor to ceiling. The bucket clanged into the sink, where all the remaining flowers died instantly.
"Ow!" said Calcifer from under his logs. "That was strong!"
Howl carefully picked the skull out from under the smoking brown remains of the flowers and dried it on one of his sleeves.
"Of course it was strong," he said. "Sophie never does things by halves."
The skull, as Howl wiped it, became bright new white, and the sleeve he was using developed a faded blue and silver patch. Howl set the skull on the bench and looked at his sleeve ruefully. Sophie had half a mind to stump straight out of the castle again and away down the drive. But there was that scarecrow. She settled for stumping to the chair instead, where she sat and fell into a deep sulk. "I'm not going to speak to any of them," she thought.
"Sophie," Howl said, "I did my best. Haven't you noticed that your aches and pains have been better lately? Or do you enjoy having those, too?"
Sophie didn't answer. Howl gave her up and turned to Percival.
"I'm glad to see that you have some brain, after all," he said. "You had me worried."
"I really don't remember very much," Percival said.
But he stopped behaving like a half-wit. He picked the guitar up and tuned it. He had it sounding much nicer in seconds.
"My sorrow revealed," Howl said pathetically. "I was born an unmusical Welshman." "Did you tell Sophie all of it? Or do you really know what the witch was trying to find out?"
"She wanted to know about Wales," said Percival.
"I thought that was it," Howl said soberly.
"Ah, well."
He went away into the bathroom, where he was gone for the next 2 hours. During that time, Percival played a number of tunes on the guitar in a slow, thoughtful way, as if he was teaching himself how to, while Michael crawled about the floor with a smoking rag, trying to get rid of the weed killer. Sophie sat in the chair and said not a word. Calcifer kept bobbing up and peeping at her and going down again under his logs. Howl came out of the bathroom with his suit glossy black, his hair glossy white, in a cloud of steam smelling of gentians.
"I may be back quite late," he said to Michael. "It's going to be Midsummer Day after midnight, and the witch may well try something. So keep all the defences up and remember all I told you, please."
"All right,"
Michael said, putting the steaming remains of the rag in the sink. Hal turned to Percival.
I think I know what's happened to you, he said. It's going to be a fair job sorting you out, but I'll have a go tomorrow after I get back.
Hal went to the door and stopped with his hand on the knob.
Sophie, are you still not talking to me? He asked miserably.
Sophie knew Hal could sound unhappy in heaven if it suited him, and he had just used her to get information out of Percival.
No, she snarled.
Hal sighed and went out. Sophie looked up and saw that the knob was pointing black down.
That does it, she thought. I don't care if it is Midsummer Day tomorrow, I'm leaving.
Chapter 20, in which Sophie finds further difficulties in leaving the castle. Midsummer Day dawned. About the same moment that it did, Hal crashed in through the door with such a noise that Sophie shot up in her cubbyhole, convinced that the witch was hot on his heels.
They think so much about me that they always play without me, Hal bellowed.
Sophie realized that he was only trying to sing Calcifer's Saucepan's song and lay down again, whereupon Hal fell over the chair and caught his foot in the stool so that it shot across the room. After that, he tried to go upstairs through the broom cupboard and then the yard. This seemed to puzzle him a little, but finally he discovered the stairs, all except the bottom one, and fell up them on his face. The whole castle shook.
"What's the matter?" Sophie asked, sticking her head through the banister.
"Rugby club reunion," Hal replied with thick dignity. "Didn't know I used to fly up the wing for my university, did you, Mrs. Nose?"
"If you were trying to fly, you must have forgotten how," Sophie said.
"I was born to strange sights," said Hal. "Things invisible to see, and I was just on my way to bed when you interrupted me. I know what all past years are and who cleft the devil's foot." "Go to bed, you fool," Calcifer said sleepily. "You're drunk."
"Who? Me?" said Hal. "I assure you, my friends, I am Consuls Stober."
He got up and stalked upstairs, feeling for the wall as if he thought it might escape him unless he kept in touch with it. His bedroom door did escape him.
"What a lie that was," Hal remarked as he walked into the wall. "My shining dishonesty will be the salvation of me."
He walked into the wall several times more in several different places before he discovered his bedroom door and crushed his way through it. Sophie could hear him falling about, saying that his bed was dodging.
"He's quite impossible," Sophie said, and she decided to leave at once.
Unfortunately, the noise Hal made woke Michael up and Percival, who was sleeping on the floor in Michael's room. Michael came downstairs, saying that they were so thoroughly awake that they might as well go out and gather the flowers for the midsummer garlands while the day was still cool. Sophie was not sorry to go out into the place of flowers for one last time. There was a warm, milky haze out there, filled with scent and half-hidden colours. Sophie thumped along, testing the squashy ground with her stick, and listening to the whirrings and twitters of the thousands of birds, feeling truly regretful. She stroked a moist satin lily and fingered one of the ragged purple flowers with long, powdery stamens. She looked back at the tall black castle breasting the mist behind them. She sighed.
"He made it much better," Percival remarked as he put an armful of hibiscus into Michael's floating bath.
"Who did?" said Michael.
"Howl," said Percival. "There were only bushes at first, and they were quite small and dry."
"You remember being here before?" Michael asked excitedly. He had by no means given up his idea that Percival might be Prince Justin.
"I think I was here with the witch," Percival said doubtfully.
They fetched two bathloads of flowers, Sophie noticed that when they came in the second time, Michael spun the knob over the door several times. That must have had something to do with keeping the witch out. Then, of course, there were the midsummer garlands to make. That took a long time. Sophie had meant to leave Michael and Percival to do that, but Michael was too busy asking Percival cunning questions, and Percival was very slow at the work. Sophie knew what made Michael excited. There was a sort of air about Percival, as if he expected something to happen soon. It made Sophie wonder just how much in the power of the witch he still was. She had to make most of the garlands. Any thoughts she might have had about staying and helping Howl against the witch vanished. Howl, who could have made all the garlands just by waving his hand, was now snoring so loudly she could hear him right through in the shop. They were so long making the garlands that it was time to open the shop before they had finished. Michael fetched them bread and honey, and they ate while they dealt with the tremendous first rush of customers. Although Midsummer Day, in the way of holidays, had turned out to be a grey and chilly day in Market Chipping, half the town came, dressed in fine holiday clothes, to buy flowers and garlands for the festival. There was the usual jostling crowd out in the street. So many people came into the shop that it was getting on for midday before Sophie finally stole away up the stairs and through the broom cupboard. They had taken so much money, Sophie thought, as she stole about packing up some food and her old clothes in a bundle, that Michael's hoard under the hearthstone would be 10 times the size.
"Have you come to talk to me?" asked Calcifer.
"In a moment," Sophie said, crossing the room with her bundle behind her back. She did not want Calcifer raising an outcry about that contract. She stretched out her hand to unhook her stick from the chair, and somebody knocked at the door. Sophie stuck with her hand stretched out, looking inquiringly at Calcifer.
"It's the mansion door," said Calcifer, "flesh and blood and harmless."
The knocking came again. "This always happens when I try to leave," Sophie thought. She turned the knob orange down and opened the door. There was a carriage in the drive beyond the statues, pulled by a goodish pair of horses. Sophie could see it round the edges of the very large footman who had been doing the knocking.
"Mrs. Sacheverell Smith to call upon the new occupants," said the footman.
How very awkward, Sophie thought. It was the result of Howell's new paint and curtains.
"We're not at her—"
she began, but Mrs. Sacheverell Smith swept the footman aside and came in.
"Wait with the carriage, Theobald," she said to the footman
as she sailed past Sophie, folding her parasol. It was Fanny. Fanny, looking wonderfully prosperous in cream silk. She was wearing a cream silk hat trimmed with roses, which Sophie remembered only too well. She remembered what she had said to that hat as she trimmed it. "You are going to have to marry money." And it was quite clear from the look of her that Fanny had.
"Oh, dear," said Fanny, looking round. "There must be some mistake. This is the servants' quarters."
"We're not really quite moved in yet, madam," Sophie said, and wondered how Fanny would feel if she knew that the old hat shop was only just beyond the broom cupboard. Fanny turned round and gasped at Sophie.
"Sophie!" she exclaimed. "Oh, good gracious, child, what's happened to you? You look about 90. Have you been very ill?"
And to Sophie's surprise, Fanny threw aside her hat and her parasol and all of her grand manner and flung her arms around Sophie and wept.
"Oh, I didn't know what had happened to you," she sobbed. "I went to Martha, and I sent to Letty, and neither of them knew. They changed places, silly girls, did you know? But nobody knew a thing about you. I've a reward out still, and here you are, working as a servant, when you could be living in luxury up the hill with me and Mr. Smith."
Sophie found she was crying as well. She hurriedly dropped her bundle, and led Fanny to the chair. She pulled the stool up and sat beside Fanny, holding her hand. By this time, they were both laughing as well as crying. They were most powerfully glad to see one another again. "It's a long story," Sophie said, after Fanny had asked her 6 times what had happened to her. "When I looked in the mirror and saw myself like this, it was such a shock that I sort of wandered away."
"Overwork," Fanny said wretchedly. "How I've blamed myself."
"Not really," said Sophie. "And you mustn't worry, because Wizard Howl took me in."
"Wizard Howl!" exclaimed Fanny. "That wicked, wicked man! Has he done this to you? Where is he? Let me at him!"
She seized her parasol and became so very warlike that Sophie had to hold her down. Sophie didn't care to think how Howl might react if Fanny woke him by stabbing him with her parasol.
"No, no," she said. "Howl has been very kind to me."
And this was true, Sophie realized. Howl showed his kindness rather strangely, but considering all Sophie had done to annoy him, he had been very good to her indeed.
"But they say he eats women alive," Fanny said, still struggling to get up.
Sophie held down her waving parasol. "He doesn't really," she said. "Do listen. He's not wicked at all." There was a bit of a fizz from the grate at this, where Calcifer was watching with some interest.
"He isn't," Sophie said, to Calcifer as much as to Fanny. "In all the time I've been here, I've not seen him work a single evil spell."
Which, again, was true, she knew.
"Then I have to believe you," Fanny said, relaxing, "though I'm sure it must be your doing if he's reformed. You always did have a way with you, Sophie. You could stop Martha's tantrums when I couldn't do a thing with her. And I always said it was thanks to you that Letty only got her own way half of the time instead of all the time. But you should have told me where you were, love."
Sophie knew she should have. She had taken Martha's view of Fanny whole and entire when she should have known Fanny better. She was ashamed. Fanny could not wait to tell Sophie about Mr. Sacheverell Smith. She launched into a long and excited account of how she had met Mr. Smith the very week Sophie had left and married him before the week was out. Sophie watched her as she talked. Being old gave her an entirely new view of Fanny. She was a lady who was still young and pretty, and she had found the hat shop as boring as Sophie did. But she had stuck with it and done her best, both with the shop and with the 3 girls, until Mr. Hatter died. Then she had suddenly been afraid she was just like Sophie, old with no reason and nothing to show for it. And then, with you not being there to pass it on to, there seemed no reason not to sell the shop, Fanny was saying, when there was a clatter of feet in the broom cupboard. Michael came through saying, "We've shut the shop, and look who's here." He was holding Martha's hand. Martha was thinner and fairer, and almost looked like herself again. She let go of Michael and rushed at Sophie, shouting, "Sophie, you should have told me," while she flung her arms round her. Then she flung her arms round Fanny, just as if she had never said all those things about her. But this was not all. Letty and Mrs. Fairfax came through the cupboard after Martha, carrying a hamper between them, and after them came Percival, who looked livelier than Sophie had ever seen him. "We came over by carrier at first light," Mrs. Fairfax said, "and we brought... Bless me, it's Fanny!" She dropped her end of the hamper and ran to hug Fanny. Letty dropped her end and ran to hug Sophie. In fact, there was such general hugging and exclaiming and shouting that Sophie thought it was a marvel Howl did not wake up. But she could hear him snoring even through the shouting.
I shall have to leave this evening, she thought. She was too glad to see everyone to consider going before that. Letty was very fond of Percival. While Michael carried the hamper to the bench and unpacked cold chickens and wines and honey puddings from it, Letty hung on to Percival's arm in an owner-like way that Sophie could not quite approve of, and made him tell her all that he remembered. Percival didn't seem to mind. Letty looked so lovely that Sophie didn't blame him. He just arrived and kept turning into a man and then into different dogs and insisting that he knew me, Letty said to Sophie. I knew I'd never seen him before, but it didn't matter. She patted Percival's shoulder as if he were still a dog.
But you had met Prince Justin, Sophie said.
Oh, yes, Letty said offhandedly. Mind you, he was in disguise in a green uniform, but it was obviously him. He was so smooth and courtly, even when he was annoyed about the finding spells. I had to make him up two lots because they would keep showing that Wizard Solomon was somewhere between us and Market Chipping, and he swore that couldn't be true. And all the time I was doing them, he kept interrupting me, calling me Sweet Lady in a sarcastic sort of way, and asking me who I was, and where my family lived, and how old I was. I thought it was cheek. I'd rather have Wizard Howl, and that's saying something. By this time everyone was milling about, eating chicken and sipping wine. Calcifer seemed to be shy. He had gone down to green flickers, and nobody seemed to notice him. Sophie wanted him to meet Letty. She tried to coax him out. "Is that really the demon who has charge of Howl's life?" Letty said, looking down at the green flickers rather disbelievingly. Sophie looked up to assure Letty that Calcifer was real and saw Miss Angorian standing by the door looking shy and uncertain. "Oh, do excuse me, I've come at a bad time, haven't I?" Miss Angorian said. "I just wanted to talk to Howl." Sophie stood up, not quite sure what to do. She was ashamed of the way she had driven Miss Angorian out before. It was only because she knew Howl was courting Miss Angorian. On the other hand, that did not mean she had to like her. Michael took things out of Sophie's hands by greeting Miss Angorian with a beaming smile and a shout of welcome. "Howl's asleep at the moment," he said. "Come and have a glass of wine while you wait." "How kind," said Miss Angorian. But it was plain that Miss Angorian was not happy. She refused wine and wandered nervously about, nibbling at a leg of chicken. The room was full of people who all knew one another very well, and she was the outsider. Fanny didn't help by turning from non-stop talk with Mrs. Fairfax and saying, "What peculiar clothes!" Martha didn't help either. She had seen how admiringly Michael greeted Miss Angorian. She went and made sure that Michael didn't talk to anyone but herself and Sophie. And Letty ignored Miss Angorian and went to sit on the stairs with Percival. Miss Angorian seemed rather quickly to decide that she had had enough. Sophie saw her at the door trying to open it. She hurried over, feeling very guilty. After all, Miss Angorian must have felt very strongly about Howl to have come here at all. "Please don't go yet," Sophie said. "I'll go and wake Howl up." "Oh, no, you mustn't do that," Miss Angorian said, smiling nervously. "I've got the day off, and I'm quite happy to wait. I thought I'd go and explore outside. It's rather stuffy in here with that funny green fire burning." This seemed to Sophie the perfect way to get rid of Miss Angorian without really getting rid of her. She politely opened the door for her. Somehow, maybe it had to do with the defences Howl had asked Michael to keep up, the knob had got turned round to purple down. Outside was a misty blaze of sun and the drifting banks of red and purple flowers. "What gorgeous rhododendrons!" Miss Angorian exclaimed in her huskiest and most throbbing voice. "I must look." She sprang eagerly down into the marshy grass. "Don't go toward the southeast," Sophie called after her. The castle was drifting off sideways. Miss Angorian buried her beautiful face in a cluster of white flowers. "I won't go far at all," she said.
"Good gracious," Fanny said, coming up behind Sophie. "Whatever has happened to my carriage?"
Sophie explained as far as she could, but Fanny was so worried that Sophie had to turn the door orange down and open it to show the mansion drive in a much greyer day, where the footman and Fanny's coachman were sitting on the roof of the carriage eating cold sausage and playing cards. Only then would Fanny believe that her carriage had not been mysteriously spirited away. Sophie was trying to explain, without really knowing herself, how one door could open on several different places, when Calcifer surged up from his logs, roaring,
"Howl!" he roared, filling the chimney with blue flame. "Howl! Howl Jenkins! The witch has found your sister's family!"
There were two violent thumps overhead. Howl's bedroom door crashed, and Howl came tearing downstairs. Letty and Percival were hurled out of his way. Fanny screamed faintly at the sight of him. Howl's hair was like a haystack, and there were red rims round his eyes.
"Got me on my weak flank, blaster!" he shouted as he shot across the room with his black sleeves flying. "I was afraid she would. Thanks, Calcifer!"
He shoved Fanny aside and hurled open the door. Sophie heard the door bang behind Howl as she hobbled upstairs. She knew it was nosy, but she had to see what happened. As she hobbled through Howl's bedroom, she heard everyone else following her.
"What a filthy room!" Fanny exclaimed.
Sophie looked out of the window. It was drizzling in the neat garden. The swing was hung with drops. The witch's waving mane of red hair was all dewed with it. She stood leaning against the swing, tall and commanding in her red robes, beckoning and beckoning again. Howl's niece Mary was shuffling over the wet grass toward the witch. She did not look as if she wanted to go, but she seemed to have no choice. Behind her, Howl's nephew Neil was shuffling toward the witch even more slowly, glowering in his most ferocious way, and Howl's sister Megan was behind the two children. Sophie could see Megan's arms gesturing and Megan's mouth opening and shutting. She was clearly giving the witch a piece of her mind, but she was being drawn toward the witch too. Howl burst out onto the lawn. He had not bothered to alter his clothes. He did not bother to do any magic. He just charged straight at the witch. The witch made a grab for Mary, but Mary was still too far away. Howl got to Mary first, slung her behind him and charged on, and the witch ran. She ran like a cat with a dog after it, across the lawn and over the neat fence, in a flurry of flame-coloured robes, with Howl like the chasing dog a foot or so behind and closing. The witch vanished over the fence in a red blur. Howl went after her in a black blur with trailing sleeves. Then the fence hid both of them from sight.
"I hope he catches her," said Martha. "The little girl's crying."
Down below, Megan put her arm round Mary and took both children indoors. There was no knowing what had happened to Howl and the witch. Letty and Percival and Martha and Michael went back downstairs. Fanny and Mrs. Fairfax were transfixed with disgust at the state of Howl's bedroom.
"Look at those spiders," Mrs. Fairfax said. "And the dust on these curtains," said Fanny.
"Annabel, I saw some brooms in that passage you came through."
"Let's get them," said Mrs. Fairfax. "I'll pin that dress up for you, Fanny, and we'll get to work. I can't bear a room to be in this state."
"Oh, poor Howl," Sophie thought. "He does love those spiders." She hovered on the stairs, wondering how to stop Mrs. Fairfax and Fanny. From downstairs, Michael called,
"Sophie, we're going to look round the mansion. Want to come?"
That seemed the ideal thing to stop the two ladies from cleaning. Sophie called to Fanny and hobbled hurriedly downstairs. Letty and Percival were already opening the door. Letty had not listened when Sophie explained it to Fanny, and it was clear that Percival did not understand either. Sophie saw they were opening it, purple down, by mistake. They got it open as Sophie hobbled across the room to put them right. The scarecrow loomed up in the doorway against the flowers.
"Shut it!" Sophie screamed.
She saw what had happened. She had actually helped the Scarecrow last night by telling it to go 10 times as fast. It had simply sped to the castle entrance and tried to get in there. But Miss Angorian was out there. Sophie wondered if she was lying in the bushes in a dead faint.
"No, don't," she said weakly.
No one was attending to her anyway. Letty's face was the colour of Fanny's dress, and she was clutching Martha. Percival was standing staring, and Michael was trying to catch the skull, which was yattering its teeth so hard that it was threatening to fall off the bench and take a wine bottle with it. And the skull seemed to have a strange effect on the guitar, too. It was giving out long, humming twangs. Nom-hrum, nom-hrum. Castlefer flamed up the chimney again.
"The thing is speaking," he said to Sophie. "It is saying it means no harm. I think it is speaking the truth. It is waiting for your permission to come in."
Certainly the Scarecrow was just standing there. It was not trying to barge inside as it had before, and Castlefer must have trusted it. He had stopped the castle moving. Sophie looked at the turnip face and the fluttering rags. It was not so frightening after all. She had once had fellow feeling for it. She rather suspected that she had just made it into a convenient excuse for not leaving the castle, because she had really wanted to stay. Now there was no point. Sophie had to leave anyway. Hal preferred Miss Angorian.
"Please come in," she said, a little croakily.
Said the guitar. The Scarecrow surged into the room with one powerful sideways hop. It stood swinging about on its one leg as if it was looking for something. The smell of flowers it had brought in with it did not hide its own smell of dust and rotting turnip. The skull yattered under Michael's fingers again. The Scarecrow spun round gladly and fell sideways toward it. Michael made one attempt to rescue the skull and then got hastily out of the way, for as the Scarecrow fell across the bench, there came the fizzing jolt of strong magic, and the skull melted into the Scarecrow's turnip head. It seemed to get inside the turnip and fill it out. There was now a strong suggestion of a rather craggy face on the turnip. The trouble was, it was on the back of the Scarecrow. The Scarecrow gave a wooden scramble, hopped upright uncertainly, and then swiftly spun its body round, so that the front of it was under the craggy turnip face. Slowly, it eased its outstretched arms down to its sides.
"Now I can speak," it said, in a somewhat mushy voice.
"I may faint," Fanny announced on the stairs.
"Nonsense," Mrs. Fairfax said behind Fanny. "The thing's only a magician's golem. It has to do what it was sent to do. They're quite harmless."
Letty, all the same, looked ready to faint, but the only one who did faint was Percival. He flopped to the floor quite quietly and lay curled up as if he were asleep. Letty, in spite of her terror, ran toward him, only to back away as the Scarecrow gave another hop and stood itself in front of Percival.
"This is one of the parts I was sent to find," it said in its mushy voice. It swung on its stick until it was facing Sophie. "I must thank you," it said. "My skull was far away, and I ran out of strength before I reached it. I would have lain in that hedge forever if you'd not come and talked life into me."
It swiveled to Mrs. Fairfax and then to Letty.
"I thank you both, too," it said.
"Who sent you? What are you supposed to do?" Sophie said.
The Scarecrow swung about uncertainly.
"More than this," it said. "There are still parts missing."
Everyone waited, most of them too shaken to speak, while the Scarecrow rotated this way and that, seemingly thinking.
"What is Percival a part of?" Sophie said.
"Let it collect itself," said Calcifer. "No one's asked it to explain itself bef—"
He suddenly stopped speaking and shrank until barely a green flame showed. Michael and Sophie exchanged alarmed glances. Then a new voice spoke out of nowhere. It was enlarged and muffled, as if it was speaking in a box, but it was unmistakably the voice of the witch.
"Michael Fisher," it said, "tell your master Hal that he fell for my decoy. I now have the woman called Lily Angorian in my fortress in the waste. Tell him I will only let her go if he comes himself to fetch her. Is that clear, Michael Fisher?"
The scarecrow whirled round and hopped for the open door. "Oh, no!" Michael cried out. "Stop it! The witch must have sent it so that she could get in here!"
Chapter 21, in which a contract is concluded before witnesses. Most people ran after the scarecrow. Sophie ran the other way, through the broom cupboard and into the shop, grabbing her stick as she went.
"This is my fault," she muttered. "I have a genius for doing things wrong. I could have kept Miss Angorian indoors. I only needed to talk to her politely, poor thing. Hal may have forgiven me a lot of things, but he's not going to forgive me for this in a hurry."
In the flower shop, she hauled the 7-league boots out of the window display and emptied hibiscus roses and water out of them onto the floor. She unlocked the shop door and towed the wet boots out onto the crowded pavement.
"Excuse me," she said to various shoes and trailing sleeves that were walking in her way. She looked up at the sun, which was not easy to find in the cloudy grey sky. "Let's see. South, east, that way. Excuse me! Excuse me!" she said, clearing a small space for the boots among the holidaymakers. She put them down, pointing the right way. Then she stepped into them and began to stride. Zip-zip! 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 It was as quick as that, and even more blurred and breathless in both boots than in one. Sophie had brief glimpses between long double strides of the mansion down at the end of the valley, gleaming between trees, with Fanny's carriage at the door, of bracken on a hillside, of a small river racing down into a green valley, of the same river sliding in a much broader valley, of the same valley turned so wide it seemed endless and blue in the distance, and a towery pile far, far off, that might have been Kingsbury, of the plain narrowing toward mountains again, of a mountain which slanted so steeply under her boot that she stumbled in spite of her stick, which stumble brought her to the edge of a deep blue misted gorge with the tops of trees far below, where she had to take another stride or fall in, and she landed on crumbly yellow sand. She dug her stick in and looked carefully round. Behind her right shoulder, some miles off, a white steamy mist almost hit the mountains she had just zipped through. Below the mist was a band of dark green. Sophie nodded. Though she could not see the moving castle this far away, she was sure the mist marked the place of flowers. She took another careful stride. Zip! It was fearsomely hot. The clay-yellow sand stretched in all directions now, shimmering in the heat. Rocks lay about in a messy way. The only growing things were occasional dismal grey bushes. The mountains looked like clouds coming up on the horizon. "If this is the waste," Sophie said, with sweat running in all her wrinkles, "then I feel sorry for the witch having to live here." She took another stride. The wind of it did not cool her down at all. The rocks and bushes were the same, but the sand was greyer, and the mountains seemed to have sunk down the sky. Sophie peered into the quivering grey glare ahead, where she thought she could see something rather higher than rock. She took one more stride. Now it was like an oven, but there was a peculiar-shaped pile about a quarter of a mile off, standing on a slight rise in the rock-littered land. It was a fantastical shape of twisted little towers rising to one main tower that pointed slightly askew, like a knotty old finger. Sophie climbed out of the boots. It was too hot to carry anything so heavy, so she trudged off to investigate with only her stick. The thing seemed to be made of the yellow-grey grit of the waste. At first, Sophie wondered if it might be some strange kind of ant's nest, but as she got nearer, she could see that it was as if something had fused together thousands of grainy yellow flower pots into a